Jason, we friends just having a conversation.
Wave your hands, hands high.
Don't stop.
Wave your hands, hands high.
Okay, welcome back to another episode of North Texas Music Fanatics. I am Jason Janik. I think this is going to be a good one. We've got somebody here who is going to have so many stories about Deep Ellum and North Texas music. And about a side that I don't know quite as much about. He knows a lot about the countryside of North Texas music. We'll get into that in a second, though, because I do have to do the whole blah, 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 Instagram, Patreon thing. I do it every week because it's important, because getting people to like and subscribe and all that goodness, that shows others that this show is important to you. This shows others that people are listening. And I want people to listen, because these stories that we have going on, we're capturing a part of North Texas history. So definitely find us at Instagram, NTXMF, and like, and even better, maybe, you know, comment or like on the different posts. The more interactive we are, I think the better. Right now, we're averaging about, you know, 100 to 150 listeners per week, which I think is great for such a niche little podcast. I'm so grateful that you guys are listening. And again, like I said, Patreon, find us there, NTXMF. You can join there without having to do a paying level. But if you do pay, I've got a $3 level. That's basically like a cup of coffee, a Coke, whatever. Or for me, a couple donuts or cookies. We do have people who signed up at the higher levels. George Reagan is supporting us at a higher level, and I really appreciate that. John Jones, he's with the Bullard McCarthy Group. So if you've got a home that you need to buy or sell, please check them out. Support the people who are supporting us. And last but not least, if you listened to Beth's episode, you know that she's made the move from being rock goddess to therapy. She does individual therapy, couples therapy, family therapy. And the group that she's formed over there at Vervewell, which you can find at vervewell.org. You know, they understand the mind and heart and soul of an artist. So, you know, if that's something that you want to look into, please, like I said, support the people who are supporting us. It would be really helpful. But now, back to like I was saying, we have a very special guy here, and I don't know how we're going to fit in even a tenth of his stories, because I know he's seen it all and done it all. Let's welcome Charlie D. Park.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty well. Where do you want to start? Because I know you've got your hand in just about everything that Deep Ellum has done and been. I mean, you've been on the radio. You've handled the door at Adair's. I mean, what have you not done?
I don't know. I mean, well, I started working door at Double Wide.
Okay, yeah.
I worked there. I worked at the internationally famous Sons of Herman Hall.
Yeah.
For a while, I bartended there right after, while I was going through in my divorce. So, yeah, it was kind of helped keep me sane.
Well, I bet we could touch on just those two venues alone and you'd have a full episode of stories because, I mean, knowing the bands that have gone through both Double Wide and Sons of Herman, I mean, those places should be on some sort of North Texas music historic register.
Yes, they should.
So, I mean, what do you want to tell me about it? What? How do you start out at a place like that? Do you just walk in and you're like, I love music, let me be part of it?
No, there was a connection between the Sons of Herman and Cana Wynn that goes back to when I started down there. And I did a punk rock show. Mm-hmm. On KNON starting, I helped Shaggy out with her show, The Pajama Party.
Okay.
Starting in 1984. And I got to hang out with other music nerds and got to be friends with the guys that did the Super Roper Redneck Review.
Sure.
And they started booking shows at the Sons of Herman. Then I started working with Shaggy and Craig Taylor's band. They had a band together. I was like their roadie gopher guy. And we played at the Sons of Herman. In fact, we opened for Robert Earl Keen Jr.
Oh, that would be great to see.
When he recorded that
Yeah, the live album.
The live album at the Sons of Herman.
I love that album.
Me too. I can hear one of my friends hollering in the background. But I got to know the people there. Later, I got married and decided I needed to be good and dropped out of the music scene and was really unhappy about it. And then once I got unmarried, I went right back to the music scene.
Yeah.
I called one of my friends and asked her about it. She was like, go down to the Sons of Herman. All your friends are there. And I went in and found a welcoming body of people. And they put me to work and, you know, kept me busy and, you know, kind of helped me through the whole divorce trauma.
Sure. The transition back to the life that you... I assume that it's something you felt inside you the entire time, right? Because if you're that passionate about music that you wind up on the radio, it's not just another job.
No, it was a passion because I got that from my dad. He was a big music nut, and we would drive around in the car like early 60s when I first started school, listening to AM country radio. We'd play a game to where I had to guess the artist before they announced it on the radio.
Oh, that's great, yeah.
So I was only second grader that knew the difference between, you know, that knew who Farron Young was and could recognize his voice. So I learned from that. Well, as I got my teenage years, you know, I gravitated to, you know, Zeppelin and Stones and Beatles.
Were you in North Texas area this whole time?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, both my parents went to Woodrow Wilson.
Okay.
And my mom's side, the family, the Italian side, they moved here in 1910. So I've been in East Dallas since then. And my grandmother and grandfather were from out by where Ray Hubbard is now.
Yep.
So, yeah, we're from this area.
Yeah, you can lay claim to North Texas as your own. Definitely.
Yes, especially East Dallas. Yeah.
So you said that you had started at KNON. In 84.
Yes.
And, you know, I don't want to make you feel old, but I was 10 years old in 84. I feel old. So if that's an issue, we commiserate here. But
no, it's not an issue.
But yeah, you know, to know that you have stories of a time where I was just starting to find myself musically.
Right.
That is special to me. To know that you've got something, what's the best way to put this? To know that you've got locked inside your brain so many great stories about North Texas music that I'm probably going to hear for the first time.
Oh, yeah.
I love Robert Earl Keen. I've got a ton of his albums. And to know that you got to witness that live.
Right.
That's just amazing.
It was memorable. It was fun.
I bet.
Yeah, a lot of fun.
What else do you remember seeing there? Because so in the early 80s, you've got REK, you've got, I'm sure, probably other country-ish bands, correct?
Yeah.
I mean, who all did play there?
Oh, I saw the old 97s there.
Yeah.
Guy Clark, Stephen Fromholtz, you know, a lot of singer-songwriters. Saw a band called Swallow. Was that it? No, Sparrow or something like that. It was one of Danny's early bands. That was fun. We sat up there and stayed up there way too late.
That was the one that he did with Carter, correct?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We sat around after the show and drank probably too much whiskey and left there way early in the morning.
Yeah. Yeah. I got to photograph old 97s there when they did the three nights in a row over Christmas holiday. Might have been. I don't know that I can put a year on it now. It's been so long.
What surprised me about them was I got talking to Philip, the drummer.
Yep.
And we got to be kind of buddies, not close friends, but we had a shared liking of industrial music.
Okay, yeah.
You know, like noise kind of stuff. And I found that quite interesting that a guy in that band would like this kind of music.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same way with Ken. We had an episode where he came on and talked about his influences, and to hear him, you know, mention Hickoids and Butthole Surfers and stuff that's much more punk than you'd really think somebody in the old 97s would listen to. It was great to hear.
Well, one time at KNON, I was interviewing the lead singer for the Swans.
Okay.
And they're a real industrial, kind of gothy sounding.
I'm not familiar with them. What era is this, do you think?
This was in the mid-80s.
Okay.
And he comes in there, and this is pre-CDs. He comes in, he sees my Johnny Cash Live at Folsom Prison album up there. I always put the album behind the turntable,
yeah,
so that I knew which turntable.
Yeah, exactly. I do that a lot when I DJ as well, just because it keeps it straight.
Yep. Yeah. Well, he looks up and he sees that, and he starts talking about how much he likes that album and likes Johnny Cash. And it kind of freaked me out at first, but then I thought about it and go, well, I like his band, and I like Johnny Cash, so it's really not that unusual to kind of be turned on to people that have a broad or an eclectic taste in music.
Yeah.
Because there's good music and there's bad music, regardless of what the genre is. And you need to open your mind and not be stuck in, you know, I like this, and not listen to anything else. And KNON helped me with that a lot, because all the DJs, we're all volunteers, and we're all music nerds. So I had hip-hop guys turn me on to, you know, new hip-hop. I had guys turn me on to Zydeco and blues, and it was really nice to learn that stuff and to have an appreciation for different genres of music. It, I think, makes you more rounded.
Oh, yeah, I definitely agree with that. I would like to think that I'm pretty open-minded and well-rounded about the music that I appreciate. And I've noticed that the different things that the Dallas Morning News has sent me to,
mm-hmm.
I've absorbed. You know, I would have never listened to Los Tigres del Norte until they sent me to photograph their concert. And then all of a sudden, I've got a couple of their CDs. You know?
Well, it's weird. I had an epiphany, and it was right after I got divorced, I decided I was going to be, you know, rockabilly and country. And I also rockabillied out with my pearl snaps and my hat and my boots. And I went into the Loon Bar.
Oh, yeah.
And because people told me, like, go there, they pour heavy. So I'm there, and these kids from the area want to buy me a shot of tequila. And they're asking me what I want. At that time, I was drinking Herradura. I was like, I want a shot of Herradura. They, well, Patron's better. It's like, well, I prefer Herradura. And we went that little dance. Finally, I said, if you're going to buy me a shot of Patron, I'll drink it. But in my mind, it clicked. Because before that, I was kind of a real musical Nazi. You know, like something was good and something was bad. But it clicked to me that it's personal taste. If you lost your virginity to Poison in the backseat of your Camaro, there's going to be an emotional attachment to that music. And I can't tell you that sucks. I can tell you that the Dolls did it first. Dolls did it better. But I can't tell you that your musical taste, you know, sucks.
Yeah.
It's all, you know, it's emotional. And songs remind you of certain things in your life. And you have an attachment to that. So that kind of helped me a lot to be more understanding.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, like you said, there are certain songs that maybe I'm not super connected to the band, but that one song lives in my memory, lives in my psyche. I remember slow dancing to Pour Some Sugar on Me.
Yeah.
At middle school dance. The girl's name was Alice, and I can't remember her last name, not that it matters, but that song brings up that middle school dance emotion.
Right.
We talked about that briefly in last week's episode, mm-hmm. where we mentioned that songs and photos, and I mean, really, you can extend it to most all art. It's really just a vessel to carry and share emotions and feelings with another person.
Yeah.
So, I mean, a good song is going to make you feel something, and you're going to carry that feeling for as long as you live.
Yeah. Well, I specifically remember, in high school, I was a big Led Zeppelin kind of guy. One of my friends got the Runaways' first album and played it for me. And that made a deep impression on 17-year-old Charlie. It's like, whoa, these are girls playing this kind of music.
Yep.
And I've been a lifelong fan since then. And I don't know, I mean, things like that just happen. And it's kind of a journey you take. So don't limit your journey.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing too, using that specific scenario, is you're at a moment in time, in musical history, where the Runaways were doing something pretty new.
Yes.
Because who else was in the kind of hard rock? I don't want to push them directly into punk, but I mean, there's punk sensibility there too. I mean, who else was a female doing that at that time? And to witness something fresh and vibrant mm-hmm. and different, that can have an effect too.
Well, Joan Jett produced the Germs' first album.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's good punk cred there. I mean, yeah. they were precursors, definitely. You know, and they turned me on to like Gary Glitter and in some ways even Lou Reed, you know, because they covered those tunes. And I tend to take covers and work backwards from there.
Which is it's a great way to do it. And I would have to say, I don't want your head to get too big, but it's a very smart way for a true music aficionado to learn and respect the craft.
Yeah, I kept seeing all these, you know, bands doing Robert Johnson tunes. It's like, who's this Robert Johnson guy? Or who's this Willie Dixon guy? And yeah. went back and listened to it like, oh my.
Yeah.
This is amazing.
Yeah, and it's lovely when somebody can go to that level of respect where you look at the people who influence the people you like mm-hmm. and you get turned on to that influence and it just keeps growing and growing.
Well, I've learned now when I meet musicians, I don't mention one word about their band. I start picking their brain about what they listen to.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause they're obviously fellow music nerds, so you know, they can help me. They can turn me on to stuff. I will mention stuff to them. And it's kind of it's a more honest interaction than me telling them how much I love their band.
Yeah.
Because they hear that all the time. But to have an honest conversation, that's, you know, that's one way to do it, guys.
Oh, yeah. No, I agree. So let's get back to some of the stuff that you witnessed. Mm-hmm. You said that you've seen the old 97s perform.
Mm-hmm.
You saw R.E.K. do his live album.
Right.
Tell me a little bit more. What all did I miss? I didn't get into the local scene until about 92-ish, 93, right around there. I mean, what did you see that I would go back and be like, oh, I so wish I would have gotten to be there next to you?
I remember at the Twilight Room, I was watching the Nerve Breakers, and they go in to do a punked up version of North to Alaska. And it caught me because my grandfather used to play that Johnny Horton album for me. And as a child, I really loved that album. And I hear these guys singing that song. And it's like amped up and punked up. And it was like, okay, these guys like country music. That's cool. They're cool. So it's kind of cool for me to admit that, you know, I like this, or hearing versions of you know, George Jones songs, you know, that the country rock guys would kind of do. But I would see shows with those guys doing it, and heard like Alejandro Escovedo, you know, True Believers, all of that kind of cowpunk stuff. That kind of resonated with me.
And I mean, that's another name. I was listening to Rhett Miller has a podcast, and he had Alejandro on, and I've known of him for a long time,
right.
But I didn't know how deep his history went, and mm-hmm. to know that you got to see that early stuff. He made it sound like it was just a gorgeous mess. and I mean, I understand where he's coming from. What did you think about that?
I liked it. Well, part of the thing is a lot of those Austin bands, Zeitgeist and all them, they would come up to Dallas to play. So I didn't have to go to Austin to see them. They would come back up here.
Where were they playing at this time?
It would be Twilight Room or Theater Gallery, even Club Clearview. One of my favorite bands to see at Clearview was Bad Mother Goose and the Brothers Grimm. That was like an offshoot. Tim Kerr, who played with Big Boys. I was a big Boys fan. This was a project that he was involved in. And when it's kind of hip-hoppy and funk, and they were fun. They were a whole lot of fun to see. So I'd see them almost every time they came to town. I saw Skoolie D and Afrika Bambaataa at...
Oh, okay. Yeah.
At Clearview. You know, a band, you know, a venue that had different taste or would take some chances on not sticking with one genre. That was a fun time, and you could go out. Deep Ellum wasn't... It was still kind of...
Trying to figure itself out in a way. Yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't all glitzy. You know, it was still a warehouse district.
Yeah. Yeah, we had an episode with Russell Hobbs, and...
Yes.
And he was kind of telling that same story. Yep.
Yeah, that... Yeah, you know, you could park along a little side street and go there, or go to Theater Gallery, go to Clearview. Yeah, it was...
And Adair's opened the same year that Theater Gallery did.
Well...
Or no, sorry. Adair's had been around for a long time. Like, what, since the 60s?
Yeah, yeah. They used to be on Cedar Springs.
So I think that's what it was, is that they moved to the current location the same year.
Yeah, because my dad took us down to the Cedar Springs location, Adair's.
Did they have music there back then, too?
Yeah, they had... Okay. I don't remember if they had music. We went for the burgers, and it's kind of way back in my... This is like in the 60s. So, and then they moved, and I would go down there and see bands. I saw, I would see 1100 Springs there, some of those guys. And I really liked working there. I worked there for like a couple of years working the door. I did have one thing I would tell bands when they loaded in. I tell them I had one request. No fucking wagon wheel. And they generally honored that.
Well, there you go. So let's do this. Let's take a break and play a song. You had mentioned Nerve Breakers, so I think it would be good to start with one of their songs.
Oh yeah.
Let's play that right now.
Okay.
Touch that dime. station and play something new.
Oh yeah, that's definitely some good stuff. So let's see. That was Barry Kuda and why am I drawing a blank on some of the other guys?
Mike Haskins.
That's right.
T Tex Edwards.
Okay.
And other guys I can't remember their names.
You obviously had seen them play live at some point, correct?
I saw them. I was still right out of high school, and they played some keg party thing at like a room off a hotel, like a hotel type setting where they had one of the party rooms. And we went there to drink the beer. We were young. That's what you do. And I saw this band on stage, and it was like nothing I'd ever seen before. Barry had on his army helmet, and they were playing loud and fast.
And he was probably shirtless, because most of the pictures I see from that time.
Yes, he was shirtless. And, you know, I kind of tucked it away in my brain, and then I started going to see other bands kind of like that, Fort Worth Cats and some of those that, it was a venue up on Northwest Highway. I can't remember the name of it, but it's where David Crosby got busted there.
Okay.
But we would go there and see some of the new wave bands.
Yeah, what's interesting to me is, you know, I'd heard some of the Nerve Breakers, but the song we just played, I was surprised at how much more new wave it sounded, because I've always thought of them just as old school punk. I mean, they're known for opening for the Sex Pistols.
Well, they opened for the Ramones.
Yeah.
The, you know, they played with the Runaways. I mean, for the longest time, they were probably the punk band in town. So anybody came through, they opened. Yeah. And I used to go to VVV Records.
Okay, where was that?
On Cedar Springs. And Mark Griffin, who went on to do MC 900 Foot Jesus, yep, and he was also in Lithium Christmas or some of those bands.
Oh, sure, with Mark.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would go in there every payday to buy new records. And he was the only person that could look at me and go, Charlie, I've got something you would like. And I would buy it without even hearing it. But it was so different finding out about music back then, because we didn't have, you know, anything streaming, and there weren't a whole bunch of punks around. So you kind of had to find, you know, see someone else dressed like you were. You'd kind of meet up and talk and become friends and find out about fanzines and, you know, go to the record store and hear what was new. Go, you know, go see shows and, you know, find out about new music that way.
Well, and there's a reason why a lot of that early punk is so collectible and so pricey these days. It wasn't a huge thing. It wasn't pressed, you know, in the tens of thousands.
No.
Or for, you know, some artists, the millions. I mean, it was a fun little niche kind of thing.
Well, I get requests on the radio show for some old punk band and an obscure song, and it's like, man, they pressed 500 copies of that single. You know, I don't have that, and it's impossible for me to find that.
Well, yeah, I think I remember Barry saying at one point that there was 145 that he didn't have of his own band.
Yeah.
So my thing, I love collecting vintage hip-hop.
Yes.
And I see a parallel between the two, because the early days of hip-hop, even though it kind of became a thing, it was still niche, and they weren't pressed in, you know, gold record and platinum record levels. And so it's the same now where, you know, 30 and 40 years later, the stuff is pretty pricey because it's just not easy to find.
Well, the thing with that early hip-hop was I had a show on KNON, and right after me was the All Hardy Deaf Party.
Okay, what was that?
It was a hip-hop show with The Snake, Big Al, and Casanova Rock.
Oh, okay, wow.
This was like mid to late 80s.
Yeah.
And the punks and the hip-hoppers, we got along because we were both into an alternative style of music. And I would always play like trash disco or electronic stuff leading into their show. It segged well. And they in turn would, you know, they turned me on to a lot of music. In fact, they got me in to go see NWA down in South Dallas at the Old Forest Theater. I think Jeff Lyles and I were the only white guys there.
Yeah, I was going to say, I've seen, when I was over at Jeff's place, you know, I saw his autograph stuff from Eazy-E, and to know, you know, that he and Bill from Bill's Records, you know, that they were two people who were really champions of this new sound here in Dallas.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a cool thing.
Yeah, it was fresh. It was interesting. It was, you know, I enjoyed it. Plus, like with Public Enemy and NWA, they had a message, you know, something they were saying.
Well, yeah, I mean, similar to punk. Again, the two parallel very well.
Right. Yeah, they were angry young men.
Do you remember any North Texas hip hop?
Other than DDT? No, because those bands would come and go so quick.
Yeah.
And I was more on the outside of that scene.
Sure.
I liked the guys and I hung out with them, but I really wasn't going to.
You didn't get too deep into it?
No, I saw Schoolie D play.
Yeah, you mentioned that, which is awesome because, I mean, that he and Ice-T. And, you know, then you get into NWA, who kind of blew it all up. But he's one of the founders of that, you know, gangsta style rap.
Oh, yeah.
And a lot of people give him credit as being the first to record it.
Yeah. And it's amazing. He does the Aqua Teen Hunger Force.
Yeah, that's a great little theme song. I don't want to get too far off track because he's what, Philadelphia, I think, not Philly. North Texas, but it's cool to know that he played here that early, because I had no clue, and I've been a fan of his for a long time.
He played at Clearview.
Wow. That would have been fun to see.
Yeah, there weren't a whole lot of people there, but it was a good show.
So, I mean, the North Texas hip-hop that I know of is, what is his name, Cool C?
Mm-hmm.
Nemesis was big. At least when I was in high school, Nemesis was big. You know, there's a few, but that's an area that I'm always craving to find out more about. Because like I said, I like vintage hip-hop, and to know that there were North Texas bands doing that, you know, I love it when I find an artist from back then.
Easy Eddie D is the man you want to talk to.
Oh, I know. I've talked to him, and we are lining up a date for him to be on this podcast soon. So we're going to have Julie Doyle from Polyphonic Spree and Tripping Daisy will be on soon. I talked to Jennifer Job Penn, another Spree member.
Mm-hmm.
She'll be on soon. And Eddie, I was like, I got to have you on because those stories about a music that I've always loved, I want to find out more about that.
Oh,
and
yeah.
He's the one to go to.
He is.
Well, let's get into some other stuff.
Okay.
I know you mentioned, you know, Adairs.
Right.
I mean, what more is there to talk about that? Because that place is storied. Like I said, they've been around since, I think, the 60s. And I remember Russell saying that they moved to Deep Ellum the same year that Theater Gallery opened up.
When I was working there at the door, I remember the manager bartender guy was telling me to be very strict on letting people in. Because he would tell me, like, we've been open 60 years without their money. If you're too stupid to get in, don't let them in. The thing with Adairs is Big Joel, the guy who books there, you know, he helped a whole lot of people. I mean, Chris Stapleton played there. A lot of those, he helped a lot of artists by giving them a place to play. And they would come in on a regular basis. One thing about interesting is seeing an artist when they're playing in small rooms, then gradually you get bigger to where they outgrow those rooms. He had a lot to do with, like, open mics and giving people a chance to play. Because, like I said, 1100 Springs, they would pack that place out.
Oh, yeah.
They did a weekly thing there.
Yeah, I shot there numerous times over the years, both for Quick and the Dallas Morning News.
Uh-huh.
I might have gone there once for D Magazine. I've always enjoyed the times that I spent there.
And there was another place that was... Three Teardrops Tavern.
I've never heard of that
one. It wasn't around very long, but some Canoan guys were behind it. I saw Gary P. Nunn play there.
Okay.
It was up on, like, not Industrial Boulevard, but kind of over that way. What's now the Arts District. That was a good place. And, of course, Poor David's.
Oh, yeah. They've been around as long as I remember.
I would go see shows there when he was on Greenville.
Yep. Yeah, my friend and I, we used to go to Winedale Tavern. And then, you know, he at the time, he smoked. And so we'd go into J. Lee's and, you know, get cigarettes or a lighter or whatever. Mm. And then there was Service Bar and the Royal Rat Club. And I always remember seeing Poor David's. Yes. I only went there a couple times. And it was because the Dallas Morning News sent me there to photograph a concert.
Yeah.
Walking by and seeing how many people were in there enjoying, you know, whatever artist it was that night. It was always exciting, and it allowed me to have a great respect for that venue.
Well, the Lost Highway, which was Shaggy and Craig Taylor's band, they played at Poor David's. David Card's done a lot for music here in town. Him and Mike Snyder.
Oh, yeah.
Mike booked at Sons of Herman.
Yeah, I remember, because I'd known Mike's name for a long time, but the first time I remember meeting him was at Sons of Herman for a show he booked.
I respect him a lot, because there was one artist he would bring in, and every time he brought her in, he would lose money on the show.
Do you remember who that was? Or do you not want to say it just because...
No, I can't. I'll have to look it up.
Okay. Well, no worries.
But you could always tell when he lost money, because he was writing a check to the band, because he didn't have cash to cover.
Yeah.
It was Tony Price.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
I'm surprised that she didn't just blow it out there.
Me too. She was amazing. Still is. But I asked him, I was like, why do you keep booking her? You lose money every show. He's like, people in Dallas need to hear this. He goes, I'll make this money up the next time I book Old 97s here. Because I'll make money on that show, and that covers what I lose on this show. And that gave me a lot of respect for him, to know that he was booking somebody and he knew in advance he was going to lose money.
Yeah. No, as I've gotten to know Mike more over the years,
yes.
I realize that he has a true appreciation for music.
Yeah. Yeah, you can see, even at his... I saw Ray Wiley Hubbard there. And to see him at a venue that small, oh my. Yeah, he's brought a lot of good artists through Dallas.
Yeah. Well, I mean, even connections to, you know, bands like Wilco...
Yes.
He's really helped foster, like you said, Old 97s. He was a big champion for Wilco from the earliest days.
Right.
He's been great for the scene.
Yes, he has.
And I figured at one point I'd have him on the podcast as well, because he's got a million stories.
Oh, yeah. He's got some good ones.
Well, so tell me this, because I know beforehand we were talking about a few things before we started recording, and we talked about your love of cars. I've got, you know, a similar love of cars, and you had mentioned that beautiful Porsche that you saw on the way over here.
Yes, a 1979 11.
Yeah, exactly. And we had brought up a couple other things that I was like, oh, well, you know, let's save that for recording,
because
I'm sure our listeners will want to hear about it. And you talked about your love of Dale Watson. I mean, what are some of the bands and some of the artists that you remember that you just can't get enough of?
Well, Dale Watson and the Derailers, I was listening to them a lot when I was going through my divorce. And that crying in your beer country stuff really helps you when you're in the deep throes of depression. Because it's somebody you can relate to. You know, he's a song about Everyone Knew But Me. Great tune. Another one about... You know, he comes home drunk and he's hits his head on the horn and just that. And the Derailers were the same way. They had some great music. I met the guys, got to be friendly with them. They were really nice guys and very supportive and generally concerned. Because one of the first shows I went to see after I got divorced was I saw the Derailers and the Left Hand Springs open for them out at the Top Rail on Northwest Highway.
Sure.
That was quite an experience, because that was a real honest-to-God honky-tonk. But, you know, I was so nervous going to see that show, because it's one of the first shows going by myself. you know, Matt and them made me feel so comfortable. You know, Matt Hillier and Steve Berg. And they personally helped me through some difficult times. Another show I really remember, it wasn't country, but in 1982, I saw the Talking Heads play at the Bronco Bowl.
Oh, wow. Yeah, the early Bronco Bowl. Yeah, nice.
Yeah, that was like an epiphany for me. I went out the next day and bought a red pair of high tops and some camouflage pants.
Yeah, I got to go to the Bronco Bowl several times in the 90s. First as just a fan.
Yeah.
And then the morning news sent me numerous times. I went a couple times for Harder Beat magazine. And I always liked that venue. We talked about it, again, last week's episode. We had talked about it was a difficult venue to shoot at because the lighting was old school lighting.
Oh, it was.
But just show-wise, it was just a fun place to see a show.
It was a great place to see a show. I saw lots and lots of bands there. So
do you remember the kind of older version, the 80s version of it, versus the 90s version of it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because I started going then. See, because I got married in, like, 91. So there's a gap there of about 10 years where I really wasn't going to see shows. So all my musical stuff from Deep Ellum and all that is all, you know, 1980 stuff. Yeah, it was great, great venue. Saw X play there. Saw The Pretenders. Saw Squeeze. You know, all great shows. Not really a bad seat in the house either.
It's just interesting to me how so many memories can be connected to shows and to music. I mean, you just mentioned a couple bands there. And it brought back memories in my head of, you know, like I photographed X at Granada.
Yeah.
And just remembering that show. It just amazes me how well music is, however you want to label that recording mm-hmm. of a memory. Music records that memory for you.
I remember I saw the Knitters, which is a side project of X, play at the Sons of Herman. And after the show, I went up to John Doe and told him I had a cat named Billy Zoom, named after the guitar player, for like 16 years. And I told John Doe that, and he looked at me and goes, "Was he an asshole?" I was like, "Yeah." He goes, "Sounds about right."
Well, let's do this. We can play another song, and you had mentioned a few different artists again. One that stuck out in my mind was... like you said, the Derailers.
Yes.
And so that might be fun to hear from them.
Yes.
What do you think?
Oh, yeah.
All right. So let's go ahead and play one of their songs now.
The sun is coming up. It's time to face the day. It's way too late to get some sleep. The clock on the wall keeps ticking out the time, Lord, my poor heart is beat. Who ever said a little time is all it takes? Must have been a fool who didn't have a heart to break. Cause when I'm awake and thinking, when I'm sleeping, I'm dreaming about baby, a man without an ounce of pride. Looking at your picture, the only one you left me, I'm about to lose my mind. Losing you has brought me to my knees. Ever since you left, I haven't had a minute of peace. I'm sleeping, I'm dreaming about you. missing you. Another night's gone and I'm still missing you.
Yeah, I knew of them, but I've never really gotten into their music, and that was pretty nice. I like that.
Yeah.
So I know that you and I, over the years, have talked about a lot of stuff, and a lot of it is photography related. You enjoy taking photos.
Yeah.
And I'm curious, because I know most of the stuff that I see you take is just kind of candid street level type stuff. You capture people's little moments, or you'll see just a unique view in the city. But what about music? I mean, have you used your camera at any shows?
No, not really, because usually if I'm at a show, I'm working.
Oh.
You know, or I don't have a photo pass to get in. I would like to. I really would like to try doing that. I bought my camera at a pawn shop during the pandemic. The only way I could get my mom out of Dallas was if I went down there with her. I stayed with my mom and my sister in Cleburne, Texas. And I would come back to do my radio show and check on the house, then go back down there. Well, I was going crazy. So I got to where I just drove around the hill country there and took photos. It's kind of weird because I save them all. And I go back and I look at some of them now. And it's like, well, what the hell was I thinking? And I discovered I really like taking shots of cemeteries.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
If I mess it up, that tombstone's going to be there next week.
In theory, hopefully, yeah.
Yeah, I can go back and, you know, retake it and get what I see in my brain in that photo. And I've had people, there was a lady that would come to my stuff at the single wide on my bingo. And she was a big influence on me. Because I was showing her my stuff I was taking on my iPhone, and she was explaining to me that it was pretty good, and then started to explain to me about like the rule of thirds and,
yep,
you know, all this technical stuff that I didn't know anything about. But she said that I was explaining to me how I was following that, and that my composition was actually fairly good, and that kind of gave me the impetus to buy said camera and start doing stuff.
With your venue connections, I would think it wouldn't be too hard for you to get into like Adair's with a camera or whatever. I think you need to try that out.
I want to, and I've recently got a new wider angle lens that, from what I understand, that is really good for doing.
Yeah, smaller venues is great. Just last night, for recording purposes, last night was Record Store Day 2024.
Yeah, right.
Somebody might be listening to this weeks later. Yeah, last night, Good Records had an all-day event, and they had a bunch of bands. And I was trying really hard to get down there to photograph I Love You. We've had Steve on for an episode, and he talked about that band and his previous bands. But I adore the stuff that he's doing with his current band. And so I was like, oh, I see that they're playing Good Records Record Store Day. So I tried my hardest to get down there, but with all that rain and stuff, I literally got down there as they were taking their gear off the stage, which sucked. But I was like, well, I'm already down here, and Dusu's playing, and I love Dusu, and I love everything that, you know, Chad and Casey and the guys are doing with that band. And so I stuck around, and I shot probably four or five bands, and I saw new bands that I'd never seen before, and I got to see, you know, Dusu, a band that I've been photographing for, you know, 25 years or so now. And to actually make this story make sense where we started from, because I know I love to ramble, I shot pretty much the entire night on my 15 to 35, because that wide angle for those smaller stages is just absolutely perfect.
Right. Problem I have is I currently work at the House of Blues.
Yep.
Well, I'm working most weekends there. And since I'm working, they're not too keen on me bringing in a camera. But we've got more staff, and I'm not working as many hours as I was.
You worked that backstage door, right? The load-in door?
Sometimes I work back there. I like it back there. I get to meet the crew.
Yeah.
I tell them inappropriate jokes. I work in the lobby a lot.
Okay.
It's fun. I'm around music. Plus, Joel Stevenson, the GM, I worked with him at Double Wide.
Okay.
So, I know his expectations. I like him. And right now, at this point in my life, I got laid off from my corporate job just as the pandemic hit. And I've decided I don't want to go back to that. I worked in health insurance, and I hated every minute of it. And I'm old enough now that I don't have to. House of Blues is helping me make my car payment. And I just started drawing my SSI on my last birthday.
Okay.
So I'm getting my Social Security now. So I can have some freedom to where I don't have to work as much as I used to.
Yep.
In fact, I think June or so, I'm heading up to New Mexico with my camera.
Yeah, you'll love that, knowing the stuff that you do shoot. Yeah.
Yeah, my camera and my four-wheel drive vehicle, I plan on getting me some landscape, especially with that wide-angle lens.
Well, that'll be good.
Yeah.
I've got a few photographer friends who moved from Dallas to New Mexico.
Right.
And they just seem really content and really happy.
I even had one photo show. I had one at Top 10 Records.
Yeah, I remember you asked me a couple questions before the show.
Yeah.
I remember you saying you had that show coming up. And how long ago was that now? Because it's been a while since. A
couple of years.
Okay.
And I sold about half of what I brought down there. And it was fun. It's interesting to see people like stuff that you created.
Yeah. Having talked to so many musicians over the years, and you too, I'm sure you probably understand very well the joy that you get from creating something and getting to share it with someone else.
Yes.
That's just so hard to beat.
Oh, it is. When I'm out shooting, I'm not thinking about anything else but that shot or what I'm looking at and how that's going to look, once I take the photo. So it helps with a lot of life's problems.
Yeah.
Because you're not thinking about it.
Yeah. A kind of similar story with musicians where I hear them say, I may have something going on in my life, but that time when I'm on the stage, I am somewhere else. I am in a different world, and it's just, I get it.
Music, photography is all creative. It helps people to be creative. Whatever outlet you have, I believe everybody needs to try to find some type of creative outlet because it helps you so much.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree with that. This is not a hobbies and crafts podcast, but even somebody like my wife, who, her job is just so, so stressful. She's an ER nurse. And the trauma and stuff that she sees on a daily basis, it can just tear you down.
Right.
And she loves getting into little crafts. And there will be something like her recent thing is building these kind of little mini diorama houses that it seems to be popular on TikTok right now.
Okay.
And after she completes one, she looks like a new, refreshed person. Mm-hmm. We all need something like that to reset us. And I've been lucky enough to have photography be that. Mm-hmm. And like you said, you've discovered the same.
Well, I will sometimes grab the camera and drive down to Wortham. Or, I went down to Crockett, Texas. There was a statue of Lightning Hopkins there.
Okay, yeah.
Well, I wanted to get a picture of that. But on the way down there, I found this, my friend that was riding with me saw this building on the side of the road. And it was Mary Allen College. And it's dilapidated. It was one of the first African-American nursing colleges in Texas. And this is like right after the Civil War. It's a very historic building. And it was very cool to be able to stop and find that total surprise and get some shots of it. And I got some decent shots and learned the history of the building. That was very satisfying and a good way to spend the day driving down to Crockett and turn around and coming back.
Well, and music related, like you said, Lightning Hopkins, I know his music and I've got a couple of his albums, but I didn't realize that he had a Texas connection. Was he from Texas?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Crockett was a a large African American community. So a lot of people there, and like my next trip's going to be down to Wortham, Blind Lemon Jefferson.
Yeah, I've seen that. The African American Museum at Fair Park has a great. I don't know if it's still up. So, you know, maybe our listeners missed it, or maybe they can still go. But it had a great show, and it touches on that, and it even shows Jefferson's grave, or I couldn't remember if it was just a monument to him or if it was his actual grave.
No, it's his grave, and it was unmarked for so long. And some local musicians here got together and got the stone for him. And it's like, he played in Deep Ellum.
Yep.
It's interesting to have that connection. And like at the House of Blues, they've got a big tri-panel dedicated to Robert Johnson. Well, they got a little, one of the deals has a deal about 508 Park.
Yeah, where he recorded.
Where he recorded.
Have you been in that building before?
I've not been in the building.
I got a chance to tour it a couple times because some of my clients that I photographed for, they got to go through it. And even though at the time the building was stripped down bare so they could do the renovation, you could still feel the history there.
Yeah.
It's just, it's such an amazing building. I don't know how far they've gotten with it over the last several years. I'm excited to see what's going to happen with that as the years progress.
Yeah, it's very very interesting. So many people don't realize he recorded what San Antonio in here, and that was it. And what history, or even like the musical history of Deep Ellum. A lot of blues guys played down there. I mean, it was, you know, the African American part of town before they took the highway through there and ripped everything up.
Yeah, there's a Facebook group dedicated to vintage photos and vintage stories of Texas. Deep Ellum photos show up there regularly, and to see just how vibrant it was even back then, it's crazy to think.
Well, I found out, I was doing some research on my family, the old Adam Hatz building used to be the Ford plant, and my great grandfather worked there in 1910.
Oh, that's cool! Wow.
Yeah,
I didn't know that it had that history. Even I've always known that it was Adam Hatz. I've got a vintage Adam Hatz hanging right up over there that I wear sometimes.
Yeah, because if you go in, it's got that little spiral thing.
Oh, sure. Okay.
That's how they sent the car parts down.
Yeah. Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Deep Ellum, and I mean that's one of the reasons why I do this podcast is because the history of Deep Ellum and North Texas music in general, it's just, it's so storied, it's so deep, it's so long. There's so much there to discover.
Well, at Adair's, there was one artist that would come in. I was sitting, because at the door, I'm right there by the stage. And this guy was playing Deep Ellum Blues. And I just kept thinking about how many times that song has been played.
Oh, yeah, that's a song that's been covered by a lot of people over the years.
Yeah, but, okay, the blues guys would, you know, early 1900s would play that.
Yep.
And it's still being played
in
Deep Ellum.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's nuts to think about.
Yes.
Well, so we got to get you in, and we got to see how you can do with that camera shooting a show. We got to find a show for you to photograph.
I think I'm either going to start at Double Wide and or Adair's.
Start with Adair's simply for the fact that stage is an easier stage to shoot.
Okay.
If I was seeing a show, both of them are equally just great stages.
Right.
But simply for the fact that it seems like there's a little more room to maneuver in Adair's and the lighting is a little brighter, start there.
Plus, obviously, I know the guys.
Yes.
So they're not going to give me grief about coming in with a camera.
Yeah, yeah. But Double White has so many great shows that would be a hard one to pass up on if you got the opportunity.
Yeah.
I've shot over the years at Double Wide, besides getting to photograph Chomsky there and Death Ray Davies. And
I love that band. I'm
trying to think, because the list just goes on and on. But the one that I remember shooting at Double Wide that I enjoyed, I think, the most was probably the Strange Boys. And
I remember those guys.
Yeah, they were a little blip here in Dallas, and then they moved to Austin, and they got, I'd say, reasonably well-known because they had a song that was used on a commercial I can't even remember who it was for, but I remember hearing it and being like, oh my God, that's awesome that, you know, here is somebody who started out playing places like Double Wide.
Right.
And now here you have them on the TV and you get to hear them. It's a cool thing.
Well, I'm a big Andy Warhol fan.
Oh yeah, me too.
And he's been a big influence on my photography. One of the guys from the Strange Boys, I remember when that film about Edie Sedgwick came out.
Okay, yeah.
He was really upset because it didn't portray Andy as such a great guy. It's like, well, he might not. He probably wasn't such a great guy.
Yeah, I mean, everybody's got their different sides. I'm a great guy to some people, and I'm a horrible, arrogant guy to other people. And some people see me in the middle where they're like, oh, yeah, he's cool most of the time, and sometimes he's not. And Andy's the same way. Andy had his great sides and his bad sides.
With musicians, and other artists, I've had to learn to separate the art from the artist.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
There's some guys that were freaky freaks.
Well, I mean, you mentioned early in this episode Gary Glitter. And
oh, yeah.
Some of that music is great, but his story is disgusting.
I refused to play him for years.
Yeah.
Decades, actually. And I've just now gone back and started to re-listen to it. And, like, okay, you know, I'm going to separate the art from the artist. You know, he might be a big freak, but we're not going to focus on that.
Yeah. That's just part of life, is you have to respect the fact that nobody's perfect. And even that local band that you love and adore, everyone's got their moments where they are not perfect.
Well, Chuck Berry was a big freak.
Yeah.
But that doesn't affect or negate what he did for music.
Yeah.
You know, you just overlook the... Not overlook, but...
Well, like you said, separate.
Yeah.
You have to respect the fact that some people are not the best people, and sometimes those are the people that make the best art, unfortunately. I mean...
I have one question for you, because I used to ask this to people at the Suns all the time. Do you feel there's a correlation between mental illness and or substance abuse and creativity?
You know, I've heard a lot of people speak on that, and I feel like it can be, but it doesn't have to be.
Okay.
If that makes sense. I know that some of my most interesting work has sprung from strife, has sprung from sadness, has sprung from struggles, but it doesn't have to be that way.
Right.
So I'd say a qualified yes. Right? So I do this with some of the episodes, and I didn't get much time to get this going, but occasionally I will ask people if they have questions for our guest. Since I forgot to do this earlier, and I put it up about an hour before we started recording,
right.
I got one question.
Okay.
So we will go ahead and ask that question. And this comes from Eric, and he says, does Charlie ever not work? Which I absolutely laughed at, because that seems so true. Because it seems like you are always doing something. You're either on KNON, you're at 8 Airs, you're at House of Blues. I see you every year at the State Fair.
Yeah.
What is your schedule like? Because it seems like somehow you've got 8 work days in a week.
I'm very busy. I stay busy. It helps my mental stuff, keeps me from thinking too much and, you know, getting inside my head. If you're busy doing stuff, you don't have time to be depressed. But I'm looking at now, I don't think I'm going to do the fair again this year, just because it's like 29 days straight.
Yeah, I'm sure that's hard on you, because
yeah,
like I said, I see you at the fair every year, and you're there like every day.
Yeah, well, I run lights for a magic show. So you have to be there every day, because once you learn the show and the lighting cues, you don't have to teach someone else that. But I'm getting to where I'm starting to feel my age a bit.
Yeah.
And realizing,
I think we all are.
Things I used to be able to do 30 years ago, I can't do now.
Yeah, it's funny you say that, because even at the Record Store Day show, I had put down my camera bag and I was shooting. And then the band gets off stage and I go to pick up my camera bag and I have to kind of inch my way down and grab it and inch my way back up.
I'm also looking forward to enjoying more things, like getting into my photography more.
Yeah.
Because I'll have time to go do that. You know, I can take trips, go to New Mexico, go to the Big Bend, you know, go to different places. And it's just like in life, you can't be static. So it might just be a different chapter or a different thing for me to move on to that and take it a little bit slower. But no, I looked at my calendar. I'm busy pretty much the rest of this week.
Yeah.
You know, I have shows. I got bingo this week.
How does that go, by the way? Because I've seen you post about that every week, but I haven't been to that. Is it pretty well received?
Yeah, I've been doing it for over 10 years.
Yeah.
It's hump day bingo. So I call a risque adult bingo at the single wide the last Wednesday of every month.
How does that work? Or is it just straight up bingo, or are you mixing in music too?
No, what I do is I take my mixer with me. We do a total of 10 games.
Okay.
I'll do two games. And while I'm doing that, I will set up a playlist and have that playing under me and pot it way down. Sure. Then we will stop, take a break so people can pee and smoke. And then I will do about 10, 15 minutes of actual DJ where I'm spinning the tunes. Then I call them back in and we do, you know.
Another round, yeah.
Another round of games. And we give away swag. I tell bad jokes. A lot of them are very...
Off color.
Yeah. Yes, off color.
But, you know, Single Wide is a good place for that. That's the kind of place where you want the kitschy, dirty, just fun.
Yeah.
So, Single Wide, I've been to a handful of times over the years. I used to go every week when it was Wynedale Tavern.
Oh, so did I.
Yeah, and I always just love seeing Josh Allen perform there. Mm-hmm. And the Carsons, and there were a couple other bands that would play regularly. But during Single Wide, I remember going and photographing the O's.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm trying to think of who else has played there over the years. Can you remember?
No, but weird thing with the O's is John Pettigo. He lived in a garage apartment, moved out, then I moved in after him.
Okay.
So we talk about our crazy ex-landlord when we see each other. But it's weird, like with him, you know, I've known him since he's with the boys named Sue.
Yeah.
You know, so we've known each other for probably, you know, close to 30 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, him and Ward.
Ward, yeah.
And then when Scotty passed, that really got to me. You know, you get to be friends with these guys.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I've known Pettigo for a long time. I've known Ward for a long time. Mm-hmm. And there's so many countless people, so many names in this area that have made up our music scene. And each time I see another person pass away, it hurts. Mm-hmm. Because those were people who created what North Texas music is about.
And my favorite Ward story is he and I got together after one of their shows. We went back to his apartment. We were sitting out in the car drinking and smoking and having a good old time. And the guy comes up and knocks on the window and tells us we have to go inside. And he gets kind of smart with him, thinking that he's a rent-a-cop. It was actually a Dallas County Sheriff officer.
Oh, exciting, yeah.
So, yeah. Needless to say, we went inside.
Yeah, I imagine so. Well, let's do this. We're going to wrap up now because we are running a little short of time. We did get to ask the listener question, which I'm glad I did not forget this time.
Yes.
Hopefully in future episodes, I'll remember to ask it earlier so we can get more questions. But I'm curious to know who you think we should play out on. We mentioned Boys Named Sue. We mentioned a couple different bands. We mentioned Strange Boys. Is there a certain band that you think would be good to go out on?
Joshua Ray Walker.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I remember before we started recording, you had mentioned having some nice connection to him. You said you were one of the first to play him, I think.
He brought up a demo copy of Last Call, and I played it. And I was the first DJ in the known universe to have played him on the radio.
That's just cool.
So, and I'm quite proud of what he's gone on to do.
Yeah, tell me about him for a second. I mean, he shows up at KNON and what, just...
Well, I knew him from hanging out at Single Wide.
Okay.
And he had a deal...
And he would come up there regularly?
Yes, he was a regular. And also, at that time, he was trying to play every week of the year. He would book a show somewhere.
Yeah.
And so he was always booking shows, and he was always playing. And I really respected that. And we just got to be friends, and I... On my show, I always try to give preference to local artists. And I will let most anybody come up and play their demo tape.
Yeah.
Because I figure if you've got the cojones to do it, it's not going to embarrass me, you know. As long as it's a decent quality tape, I'll let you play it. And he came up and did that. And, you know, we've been friends since then.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah. Yeah, I used to joke with him and his sweetie pie about stuff. And we'd be up there doing tequila shots and getting into trouble.
Yeah. Having some proper type of fun, right?
Yes.
All right, so let's do this then. We'll definitely go out on his song that you broke to the universe.
Yes.
We'll play that, and we'll say our goodbyes to all of our listeners. And well, thank you for being on the show. It was great.
Oh, it was great being here. Thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, I definitely learned some stuff about the era of Deep Ellum that was, you know, right before me, which was great. I always love learning more about the history of mm-hmm. North Texas music.
Yeah.
So I'm glad we got a chance to do this, and hopefully the listeners loved it too.
I hope they do too. Thank you.
All right, so let's go out on this song, and thank you and goodbye.
Bye.
We've been talking for a while, and I think I like you. Smile. If you wanna go, we better go fast, 'cause I don't think this is meant to last. 'Cause I don't wanna be here when the street lights call. Don't wanna see your face when the lights come on. I'm pretty sure you think my name is Paul. Be here when the lights come on. I can't hear the thing you say. You don't care anyway. Well, I'll just nod, pretend to hear, try not to stare, and pay for. See your face when the lights come on. I'm pretty sure you think my name's Paul. 'Cause I don't wanna be here when the lights come on. Well, I would take you home in my fancy car if I had a home or a fancy car. I think the bathrooms in this bar have walls too thick to hear. We could take a stroll out to your car, and dim parking lights take things too far. When I take my leave, your standards are so low, you shed a tear. Well, take a look, it could be worse. Close my tab, go on, grab your purse. I can't say if we'll be missed when we're gone, but at least tonight
won't be alone. 'Cause I don't wanna be here when the state lights come. Don't wanna see your face when the lights come on. I'm pretty sure you think my name's Paul. I don't wanna be here when the lights come on. Let's do that one again. 'Cause I don't wanna be here when the state lights come. Don't wanna see your face when the lights come on. I'm pretty sure you think my name is Paul. Thank you all so much for coming.